You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro, who's the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, we have to talk about one thing straight off, and that is Sasol. Because it says here,
yeah.
I'm not looking at a business site now, I'm looking at the Daily Maverick. It says here, Sasol fires executives to restore trust. What better way to restore trust, Daily Maverick goes on to say, than to fire your company's CEOs? Sasol thought so, at any rate, announcing the axing of Bongani Mbaba, I think I'm saying that correctly, and Stephen Cornell as part of their consequence management process. I don't know what that means, but anyway, Sasol went surging up today because everything is out the way now and people can get on with their lives as stakeholders and shareholders and Sasol executives. It's an extraordinary story to me, this Lake Charles rubbish.
I think it's quite complicated, or it's quite complicated to try and assess what's going to happen next. I think they had to stand down, and I think the market wanted management to be responsible for the cost overruns. Lindsay, to start with Lake Charles, at the end it's going to cost them anywhere between $12.6 billion and $12.9 billion. That's according to
dollars
the results
or rands?
That came. Dollars, okay. Now, if you convert it at the moment, at the present rate, that comes to 182 billion rand. Where the market cap of Sasol is probably 188 billion, thereabouts, you know, give a little bit either way. So the thing is that at 182 billion rand, the returns they're going to make is not going to match an investment of that size.
Yes.
So the market's already marking them down. In my mind, I'm trying to work out, well, what in the market's mind are they valuing Lake Charles? Because you certainly can't value the rest of Sasol's projects at 6 billion or 7 billion, you know what I mean, which makes up that. So they've, in their minds, investors have already marked down this, the Lake Charles project to almost half, maybe 8 billion, which was the original estimates. Maybe we've already marked it down to those kind of levels. And somewhere down the line, Sasol will actually mark it down in the balance sheet to those levels. But whatever you think, it's been a huge cost overrun and a huge waste of money. You know, they'll start making money now, but I mean, somebody has to pay for that, the 4 billion overstatement or overspend. So management's responsible for that. You know, it's obviously a project.
It'll take them a long time to get back 12, 13 billion US dollars, even if they do start making money now.
Yeah. But no one, you know what? This is typical. If I'm here at Sasfin sitting here and I write off 100,000 or 200,000 or 300,000 rand, or I don't know, make a mess of that magnitude, believe me, I get one kick in the bum.
Yes.
And, you know, somewhere along the line, I will suffer the pain of that. Yeah, you can write off 4 billion or something and 5 billion and, you know, you lose your job, you know, or whatever it is. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. No one really suffers, other than the shareholders have suffered, etc. And it's wonderful to write off, you know, where you're not responsible, to write off these huge amounts. And it's something which we see all the time. I mean, it happens in corporations all the time. So it's very easy to be gung-ho with shareholders' money.
It's very interesting. It's interesting what you say, because I was watching a piece. I mean, it was a satirical piece on US television a couple of nights ago. And this person said, you know, Kevin Spacey apparently behaved inappropriately in a bar with a young man and touched the man's leg or his genitals or something like that in the bar, and he lost his job and he's lost his career and it's all gone. Donald Trump can say in that well-publicized and well-viewed audio recording, he said, I can, with impunity, grab a woman by the genitals, and yet he's still president of the United States. So it's one rule for one person, one rule for another.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I don't think we're ever going to overcome that one. And somehow it's all been forgiven and forgotten. So, But I think when you come back to corporate, the amount, when I go through this year, and maybe over the last year or 2 years, and I see the amount of money management have written off, it's staggering with impunity. With impunity, you know, in many cases, in many cases, management still linger. They're still there. They're still earning their big money, still earning huge amounts. And you've got to question that. You know, you've got to question who's in charge. I think because the boardroom becomes such a cozy place. And Lindsay, there's another aspect of it. We don't have shareholders involved anymore. Activism doesn't exist simply because there's so many passive investors today, unit trusts or ETFs, etc., who just haven't got the energy or desire to actually take up those issues. So, was it only the two CEOs that were responsible, or was it the whole Sasol board? What about the chairman? What kind of circuit breakers did they have in place, or what kind of controls that they have in place to stop this getting out of hand? So the two managers stand off, everybody else is there, and it's life as usual. So they fell on their sword. But I mean, you've got a board, and Lindsay, it comes back to the same Steinhoff issue. You've also got non-executives whom you appoint there to look at these things. So what are they there for?
Anyway, it's very true. Well, they're there for their $400,000 a month, I suppose.
Sure. So you've got to say, if these things can happen with non-executives, why the hell pay them? You know, why the hell have non-executives? Mm-hmm. So wherever we've gone, all the corporate scandals of this year, or corporal write-offs from EOH to Steinhoff to Blue Label, keep going. You know, the amount of money that is just shelled is money that has just been lost. And so where are all the controls, you know?
Talk about that. Actually, before we go back to corporate issues and the JSE and the market action today, David, there's a little bit of a scandal brewing, according to the Sunday World anyway. I was speaking to Cathy Katapodis, the ex-news editor at 702 Talk Radio, and she was telling me that Gwede Mantashe and Tito Mboweni are in a love triangle. I love that word. I love that phrase, or the love triangle, with a woman in her early 20s. And she came up with all sorts of details. I mean, Gwede Mantashe was called the tiger. Tito Mboweni was the controlling man. But it's just the last thing you need ahead of the MTBPS, isn't it? Scandals everywhere, every level of our society.
I hope it doesn't break before Wednesday. We've got the midterm.
It's broken. It was in the Sunday World. Yeah, they're both in a love tussle with this young 20-year-old. It's very interesting. Let's go back to the JSE today. Let's go to more politics now. We've spoken a little bit about Donald Trump. We've spoken about the board at Sasol and the non-executives as well. But let's talk about Brexit, because Boris Johnson said he'd rather be dead in a ditch than request an extension to Brexit. And of course, he's requested an extension to Brexit, and it's now been ratified by the European Union, and it's now January the 31st. So I can't see him dead in a ditch, but certainly he's made a fool of himself again.
And everybody forgives him and think life carries on.
I don't.
You don't forgive him.
No.
I don't forgive him. What I'm trying to say is that the rest of the UK or Parliament forgives him, and we carry on. So what's the next move in the process? Are they going to have a general election before the 31st, or does this go beyond the 31st of January now?
I think they're voting now, actually. I think they're voting now. Let me have a look at election vote while you go on. What else is happening in the market today, David? Anything you're seeing?
Oh, plenty. I think the big story is, Johnson pushes for December 12 election.
Yes.
It's just come through on the headlines now. So he's pushing for it. Is this what they're going to vote on now? I don't know if that's what you're going to look up.
Yes, that's right. He was talking about that a couple of days ago, but now he's. I think the MPs are to vote on this in the next few minutes, actually. But it'll be very interesting.
I think the big story is that the S&P is at an all-time high now. That's a US market.
Yes.
It's at an intraday high as well. So they're closing high. Was in late July at about 302.5. We're well above that now. We're at 304.2.
Wow.
But if you take an intraday high, in other words, we even at a new high there, because sometimes markets rush up and then close a little down. So we're at all-time highs. And
fantastic.
It's difficult to forecast or predict, thinking about where we were a couple of weeks ago, you know, in the kind of climate that we found, where there was Trump was fighting with the Chinese, there were the impeachment issues, Brexit was uncertain as it is now, there were Hong Kong was flaring up, there were so many uncertainties. So it's a little peculiar to find that we're in these very high areas. And, you know, corporate results are decent. They're not spectacular. In many cases, they're down on where we were last year, but maybe perhaps a little steadier than we thought. But there does seem to be buying of, you know, certainly buying of equities. And Lindsay, I would only say this is against the fact that we're going to see further rate cuts in the U.S. and we're in a very low interest rate environment, which obviously makes makes equities, you know, more attractive, a lot more attractive. But it's quite peculiar because along the way we've been all over the place. You know, no one would have forecast this with any degree of certainty. So I'm happy we're there, but I'm just hoping we can hold.
Yes, I hope so too. And I just wonder what the spur was. Was it corporate results out of S&P listed companies, or was it the fact that there's this feel-good feeling because of the head of, as Jim Jeffries, the Australian comedian, would say, Isis, the ISIS chap, al-Baghdadi, has been taken out in the last 24 hours. Do you think that bolsters Trump's 2020 re-election campaign?
I don't think so. He was booed in Washington. I don't know. He made an appearance.
Yeah.
So I don't think he's Mr. Popular. And people are now talking, quite honestly, they're beginning to discuss Elizabeth Warren, what would happen if she was head. Would the Republicans still hold the Senate? And there's all kinds of other issues. Trump's been under a bit of pressure with impeachment, but I still think he's probably favored to take the election. Yeah. But I think it's more to do with trade wars. I think maybe that they're going to sign this phase one deal, and that will relieve some pressure. But I'm not sure. I think most of it is, we're in a low growth, low inflation, low interest rate environment. So if you can produce a decent set of results, I think, and give a decent dividend yield, I think it becomes more attractive than looking for yield in fixed interest investments and that. So I think that's one of the biggest driver is the fact that there are, you know, it's very difficult to find yield outside of equities. But who knows?
Yeah.
Looking at the U.S. markets, it's tech stocks that obviously take the lead in these kind of markets. Very strong there, and we've got also Europe up quite nicely, so that's followed through here. So the sentiment is catchy, and we're having a pretty decent day on the JSE, you know, as well with a decent spread of decent spread of gains. Of course, what happens when everything else goes up, gold goes down, and vice versa. So gold shares under a bit of pressure mainly as gold price comes down and people look for more risky investments.
Okay.
I hate that risk on. I hate that expression, risk on.
Risk on, risk off, yeah. Anyway, what does that mean?
Risk on, risk on.
Do you think this might be sort of a blow-off
to
the upside, or do you think this is just the continuation of something that's been in place now for just over 10 and a half years? And never forget that. We've been in the bull market for 10 and a half years. Extraordinary.
It is. We just grind our way up. You know, so if you've been willing to take the path, you know, you've done pretty well. You're doing okay. And I think it's nothing more than the consequence of very, very low interest rates. And I think everybody wishes we could get out of that and that you can go to a more normal situation where inflation rears its head. And I've got no answer for all of these. So don't ask me, there's a lot of speculation why inflation is never taken off, and I don't even think the Federal Reserve or any central bankers or economists can actually explain it. They can come up with some kind of theories, but I don't think I think they're guessing. But it's nothing more than people feel more comfortable in some of these businesses, and of course these businesses thrive where they don't have to pay. If they borrow money, they don't have to pay any interest, so there's no punishment on their balance sheet if they go into debt. So it's I just go for the ride. I like it, and I like what I see, and I say I'm 100% equities for that reason, because there's absolutely no incentive for me to go into a fixed interest investment that's giving me no return. You know, it gives me, and in fact, I might even have to pay in certain circumstances.
Yeah, if you're an Austrian bondholder or a Swedish bondholder or a German bondholder of a 2-year mm-hmm. note or something, yes, of course, you have to pay mm-hmm. the bank to actually take your money. It's just, it's unbelievable. it's like having a storage facility.
But Lindsay, if you think through it, what is it saying? It's just saying that those people believe that their money is safer in the bank, even if they have to pay for it, rather than put it elsewhere where they could lose money because of recession or because of some other fallout. So they're only doing it because they're absolutely bung, you know, dead scared of losing it. Why would you put your money at a zero interest rate if you weren't absolutely petrified that it was going to lose its value or some other factor would happen that would cause its depreciation, decay? So this is the opposite. I mean, I'm on the opposite side of that. I'm saying, what the hell? I like these businesses. Microsoft gets a $10 billion deal with the Pentagon for cloud. LVMH is making a bid for Tiffany's at about $12 billion or whatever it is, so on. So there's plenty of action out there. And you can finance these at zero interest.
Why did I see something mm-hmm. today that I thought might be the signal that it was the end of the market? Something listing or something. I can't quite remember what it is. Something happened today, and I thought, I must talk to David Shapiro about this. For the life of me, I can't remember what it is. But anyway, I'll come to it in a moment. David, a great sporting weekend that we just had. Rugby, first of all. Yeah, you're more of a cricket and a football fan than a rugby fan. We can't ignore this game, savage as it is.
I wanted to play, yeah. You know, when I was 7, 8 years old, I used to go watch rugby. I watched the Lions when they toured here in 1955. I loved rugby. I wanted to be a scrum half, but I haven't got the build for it anymore, you know. I'm like a twig. So I had to switch to soccer. And I must admit, when I watch rugby, I used to love rugby, you know. But, I mean, I love the open play. But today it is so professional and so orchestrated, you know. And to be honest, I know it can come under criticism, but it's just two brawny sides having a go at each other, you know. Banging into each other, and I say, I just wish that ball would come out. You know, I don't care about the result. You want to be entertained, and you want to see great moves. You know, in soccer, I love. There's nothing that I love more than a perler shot from outside the area, hitting the top, you know, in the top corner or something like that, or Messi scoring goals. That's what gives me the thrill. And there's nothing that I like more in rugby as someone, you know, running 50 yards, dodging and. You know, going 50 meters, whatever it is, and, you know, scoring under the post or in the corner. We don't see that. We just see brawn, you know, just bashing over the line, you know, bashing. Phase 10, phase 11, phase 12. For God's sake, but get the ball out. So I'll come under criticism from the Beer and Bri Brigade, but still, you know. You've got to have a lot of patience to sit through this.
Who's going to win next week?
That's why you drink beer.
Who's going to win next week?
I don't know. It's Eddie Jones, hey? He's smart.
He really is. And that whole business with the way they confronted the haka with that V-shaped formation, it completely discombobulated the All Blacks. They didn't know what was going on. There's something in their minds, and then England just smashed them. I mean, they were lucky to get 7 points, actually. It should have been about – England had 2 tries disallowed. It should have been maybe 27-28-0.
Yeah, they were very smart. They were very well prepared, and I think it highlights the benefit of a good coach. You know, you can't take anything away from him. I mean, what he did with Japan against the South Africans, the Springboks, 4 years ago.
Yes,
these kind of moves. You know, he's a very smart man, and he plays to a game plan. He can detect where the weaknesses are, and I think South African rugby is pretty straightforward. So let's see. South Africa can win. I mean, there's no doubt. They've got the fitness and they've got the strength. But you just want to see a decent game. You know, you want to have fun, man.
Yeah, you're quite right. It should be fun.
I hate penalties. Yeah. I hate penalties. You know, you kind of trick somebody into giving a penalty. You all cheer. Why? Because you can kick the ball through the post. You know? That's only desperation in UK American football, you know, where they have a kick at it. The idea is to get over the blooming, you know, opposing line. You don't play for a kick at goal.
Do you remember Nils Peter actually did it? It had a little bit of a stint there, and it didn't work out.
Yeah. No. But he did teach them the side. In fact, I don't know, I think it was, I'm trying to remember the first chap who actually used the round kick. You know, we used to kick with our toes in the olden days. Got great memories of Van der Scaife missing. He would have put the Springboks up 23-22 against the Lions in 55. Van der Scaife missed that kick. I still have nightmares about it. I was there at Ellis Park.
Yeah.
And when he missed the kick, it was a great, I remember that. But there they kicked with their toes, you know. Now it's, the common kick is this roundhouse kick, and that which is introduced by South African rugby and used in, American football.
David, let's talk about football now, real football, because Arsenal drew 2-2 with Crystal Palace, having been 2-0 up in 9 minutes, naivety in the extreme, and they were lucky not to lose. Liverpool were lucky to beat Spurs 2-1, and so we go on.
And I haven't been enamoured by the soccer. I think Man City's still playing the best soccer.
I do.
I think so. Liverpool are grinding it out, and everybody's getting carried away, but they had moments, but couldn't convert. It still, I don't know. Spurs were such rubbish. That's why they managed to, Liverpool managed to come back. And there's always a dodgy penalty here and there. You know, there's VAR. I don't know.
Manchester United missed two penalties, talking about penalties. But I just want to go back to Arsenal because that's your team. It says, as captain's performances go, it probably wasn't the one Arsenal manager Unai Emery was looking for when he appointed Grant Xhaka skipper of the Gunners in September. Having squandered a two-goal lead to Crystal Palace in a Premier League game on Sunday, this is according to CNN, the Swiss international captain was substituted by the manager in the 61st minute as Arsenal searched for a third goal. He was greeted by ironic cheers, but as the 27-year-old ambled to the side of the pitch, boos began to ring out around the stadium. And then he didn't cover his mouth, which is what players do these days because there are lip readers working out what they're saying. He launched a foul mouth tirade against the Arsenal fans. Yeah. How can he carry on as the captain? He can't.
He won't. He took off his jersey and went down the tunnel. He refused to shake Unai Emery's hand. You know, I would also do that. But, I mean, it wasn't a thrilling performance. But why the fans booed is that when you 2-0 up, that's where the captains take over. You know, and he just, it was a very sloppy performance by Arsenal and particularly by the defense. And the captains are there to captain the team. And I think it's just a team without any kind of, there's nothing binding them. You can see that this is not a team that likes each other. And to be honest, I'm an Ozil fan. I think that he's got wonderful skill. People always blame him for everything, but he's the kind of person you need in a situation who can actually find a hole in the defense, which none of the other youngsters or none of the other people who are there. So I just think Arsenal, I think, you know, you just won Wenger back, and you know how bad Wenger was towards the latter part.
I never thought I'd hear you say that. David Shapiro, thank you so much for your time. David Shapiro is the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities, and that was Shapiro World. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.